Ahoy everyone, this is Voyagers Under Sail, the audio journal. This is recording number 27. Today it's Friday, 2nd of November 2018. It's around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We are 200 miles south of the island of El Hierro, heading towards Cap Verde Islands. We are another 5 days away from Cap Verde. We've been out at sea for 2 days now, and 2 hours will be exactly 2 days. We left the port of Estaca in El Hierro at 5 o'clock in the afternoon 2 days ago. So last time I was trying to share our experience on the island of El Hierro. Okay, we rented the car for 3 days, and we're just getting ready to explore the island. The island of El Hierro, it's very small. During those 3 days, we are able to drive around the island every single day. It takes maybe an hour and a half from the top of the island to go all the way to the south. And if you want to cross it like east to west, it takes maybe half an hour only. So it's definitely not a big island, but it's quite diverse, okay? It is a volcanic island, as we all know by now. And apparently it's the youngest island in the archipelago. And that makes for a very special landscape. If it wouldn't be for the vegetation up in the mountains, you could almost say that the whole island is black. Like the beaches are black, okay, now Claudia is pointing to me to a fishing vessel that's about 4 miles behind us. So there is a fishing vessel behind us, around 4 miles. They've been heading towards us for the past 2 hours. I tried to call them on the radio. They didn't answer. Apparently we'll be passing in front of them at about 1 mile, but it's still quite, it's a bit of attention to know that you have a fishing vessel moving straight towards you and not answering the radio. But anyway, he just appeared on the horizon. The seas here are about 2.5 meters right now. The wind is 14 knots. We are doing around 7.5 knots boat speed, which is great. We didn't have this kind of boat speed all the time, but the wind increased since yesterday afternoon, and since then we got a really good speed. Anyway, coming back to the island of El Hierro. So if it wouldn't be for the vegetation on top of the island will be almost black all the way around, like black beaches, black everything, okay? Rocks, everywhere you look, it's all black. But on top, in the middle of the island, on top and kind of onto the southeast side, there is a beautiful pine forest, beautiful vegetation. It's a really pleasant place. When you contrast the rest of the landscape with this part of the island, it's kind of a bit of a fresh look. I heard people describing El Hierro of being mystical. It's definitely the kind of place that doesn't really bring just joy. You know, there are places where you just go and feel joy when you look at the landscape. In my opinion, El Hierro is not that kind of place. Because of all the rugged coast, the black rocks, the black sand, the volcanoes, it's just a very stern landscape. We went to the south of the island into the port called Restina. We just drove down there, and it's supposed to be a tourist destination for divers and snorkeling. We couldn't snorkel because the sea was too agitated. But even that place just didn't, you know, you look around, it's pleasant, but it's not joyful. You know, sometimes you go to a holiday resort and, joy is just around you. El Hierro is not the place to feel joy. You look at the landscape, you are in awe, you are amazed at what you see. Spectacular in many places, really spectacular, cliffs and all of that, but it's not joyful. Everyone in my family agreed that El Hierro is not a place to come on holiday. It's a place to come to explore, but it's not a place to come and relax and recharge your batteries. This is at least our opinion, and our opinion doesn't have to be right. So we spent the 3 days driving in different places, through the forest, on the coast, different towns, stopping. We really didn't eat in any proper restaurant, just in a kind of, coffee shops, and then it was cooking on the boat. So we cannot say much about the cuisine. We did bought some cheese and produce, and it looked very nice and fresh. Good quality, lovely cheese again. At the same time, let's not forget, it's end of October, beginning of November. It's out of the tourist season. So probably the not so joyful atmosphere that we expected to find on the island was somehow expected not to be found, all right? Anyway, we left El Hierro 2 days ago. Today it's Friday, so we left El Hierro on Wednesday for this leg from Canary Islands to Cape Verde. We left with the wind around 10 to 12 knots, maybe 8 sometimes, and we've been under sail as soon as we left the port. We left the port, we put the sail up half an hour later or so, and since then we've been sailing non-stop. We are only turning the engine on once or twice a day just to make sure that we flush any water from the exhaust. That's one little tip that I was taught by another sailor. A lot of boats, especially when you sail in high seas, if you don't turn the engine twice a day, water can get pushed up the exhaust into your engine room, basically, slowly. So it's a good practice to turn the engine on maybe twice a day just to flush the water out of the exhaust. It's been the rawest ride so far. David is counting the days until we go back to Ireland. He's so bored by this trip. How many days, David?
608.
So there are 680 days until we get back to 608 days until we get back to Ireland, according to his counting. I've been doing the cooking because Claudia, as soon as she gets into the galley, she will start feeling sick. So I've been doing the cooking, I've been doing the cleaning with a bit of help. But we have the autopilot, and the autopilot is doing a great job despite the high seas and all of this. It's not failing on us. The batteries are fine, so it's almost 44 hours of autopilot. The batteries are getting charged by the solar panel. I'm still getting good voltage. Right now I think I have 13 volts on the battery bank. The waves are coming from port side, back side of the boat, so it kind of lifts the boat and goes down. We had 3 hours ago the boat was doing almost 9 knots under 20 knots of wind. So despite being really, really heavy, because we have loads of stuff on the boat, the water tank it's full to the brim, we're still doing a decent speed. Okay, I'll try to record a bit more of our experience until we get to Cape Verde. Just to summarize El Hierro one more time, in our opinion, it's a beautiful place, beautiful landscape, but somehow sad. There is a tone of sadness going all the way around. Seriously, maybe it was just our mood. But you didn't go there to party, that's for sure. And for some reason, I didn't feel that I can go to El Hierro, stay in a nice villa, and come back after a week recharged. I wouldn't feel recharged, at least not in the month of November. Maybe in other months of the year, everything will look different. But there is the mountain in middle of the island at 1,500 meters high. And because of the trade winds, from about 1,000 meters high, the top of the mountain is always covered in clouds. So there is no way to be on top of the mountain and have a nice clear view around you. Almost all the time there is clouds, and it makes that mist. That's what actually keeps the, you know, the vegetation, the green part, the pine forest, keeps it going. There are some lovely forests in the middle of the island. And beautiful rainbows we've seen, yeah. We ate some nice quesadillas, which, by the way, it's actually a cheese cake kind of dessert. It's not a savory dish, it's a dessert. We were absolutely sure quesadillas are savory dish, and we stopped there for lunch and just find out that we've bought a full box of cheese pies. So that's it for El Hierro. The port was pretty cheap, like 17 euro a night, water and electricity. Very few boats in the port. And that's it with El Hierro, okay? We'll record more in a couple of days once we do a bit more crossing towards Cap Verde. But right now, we are just, you know, killing time, trying to read, trying to get rid of headaches. You can't cook too much because you get a lot of rolling. But despite this, before we left, Claudia made a full pot of soup, vegetable soup. We had soup before we left. And then we didn't have any place to keep a pot of soup without spilling. So we wrapped it nicely and put it at the back of the boat in a locker. Thankfully, the soup didn't spill, so we had nice hot soup for lunch. Also, we made tortilla tuna wraps. We made omelette. We made shepherd's pie. That was pre-made. We just heat it up. But soon enough, we'll run out of all these pre-prepared meals, and we have to start doing some cooking. And with 2.5 meter waves around you, that's about 7-8 feet waves, it's not easy to be in the galley, but that's the life at sea. That's what you need to do in order to get to Cap Verde. Some of us are excited about Cap Verde, some of us are a little bit
one of us is excited about Cap Verde, three of us aren't.
So I'm excited about Cap Verde. The rest of the family are a little bit kind of when can we get to the sandy beaches in the Caribbean? That's going to be towards the middle of December. We're still about six weeks away from that. Until then, we put up with the rough life at sea. All right. Cheerio. Talk to you later. Okay. Now, this is Saturday. It's the next day. Saturday morning, it's around 7:30 London time, local time. You can argue it's 7:30, it's 8:30, it's 6:30, depending what you consider local time. But universal time, it's 7:30. The sun just has come above the horizon. A very clear sky, almost no clouds. We have 12 to 13 knots of wind. We're moving around 5 knots. It's swell, it's only 1.5 meters, so it is rolly, but you know, comfortable, and we're not racing along. But last night was pretty uncomfortable. We had 2.5 meters swell, kind of breaking. Wind was 23-25, we even had it at 27, but definitely around 23 for a good bit. And we're doing 7.5-8 knots with one reef in the main, and the head sail maybe half rolled in, kind of, yeah. So the two of us, me and Claudia, had to spend almost the whole night in the cockpit. Around 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, Claudia went below. The problem was that the autopilot would disconnect like every now and again when a big wave will come and really take the boat off course, the autopilot will disconnect and it will take us 2-3 minutes until we manage to put the boat back on course and turn on again the autopilot. I mean, basically the autopilot will just disconnect, the computer will turn shut down. So we had to wait for the computer to wake up again and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't scary, but it wasn't comfortable because if the autopilot gives up, we are done. We have to hand steer. And you don't want to do that for days and days. You just can't do it. And the autopilot is doing a good job, keeping a really nice heading without changing the course. We had to change our course around 6 o'clock this morning because the tanker was heading towards us, like really head-on collision. Claudia spotted him around 12-13 miles away on the AIS. I was kind of nodding, I didn't pay attention. He was moving at 11 knots, we were moving at about 6 knots at that time. So we had less than an hour to meet. I called him on the radio, he answered straight away. We agreed on a port-to-port crossing. He did alter his course a little, like, you know, from 24 degrees, he changed it to 25 degrees, his heading, okay? But it wasn't enough. I looked at the prediction that the AIS was making and we'll pass maybe less than half a mile from each other. 400 yards, kind of, or something like that. I didn't feel comfortable. So at that time, we decided to jibe. Because I have a preventer rigged on the main and all of that, we, you know, it can take 3-5 minutes to do a jab slowly, so without, you know, forcing anything, without breaking anything. We did jibe and we moved away from the tanker. And sure enough, like even after about 15 minutes of sailing away from the line from our initial course, okay, when we looked to the side and we saw the tanker, it was a 200 meters long tanker, okay? It was massive and still close to us. When a tanker is 200 meters long, you don't want to pass at 400 meters beside it. You just don't. It feels like... No, you don't. You want to be 2 miles away if possible. Anyway, we did that and we changed sails to the other side, to the port side of the boat for the first time in 2.5 days. We are still not on a straight course towards Cap Verde. We are doing like 255, 260 now. We should be doing 235 to be exactly on course to Cap Verde. But because the wind is exactly behind us, as I said earlier, we wouldn't be able to go straight to 235 without, you know, exposing ourselves to an accidental jibe and stuff like that. So I prefer to add, if we have another day or half a day to the crossing, but be safe. Everybody else is sleeping. Dora and David are sleeping in the back cabins. They, you know, Dora woke up a couple of times through the night to come and check if we are okay. She was afraid that we were weird to fell overboard. Me and Claudia are wearing harnesses all the time. As soon as the night comes, I wear my harness all day long because I just move around the boat. But Claudia, as soon as the night comes, she has the harness on, and the second you step in the cockpit, you clip in. So that's the rule. So we are both clipped in last night. Myself, I wear my harness all the time because I go and maybe get a bucket of seawater to wash the dishes, or I do a tour around the boat to make sure everything looks okay. And it's easy. If I have the harness on and if something comes up and something, an emergency happens, I don't have to waste time putting the harness on. I just go clip in and can attend to whatever the issue is. So far, no emergencies. We are sailing somehow conservatively. Probably we could do a bit, a bit more speed. If I had to keep more sail out. No, that's the computer giving problems. Talk to you later, guys. Claudia? So the autopilot just disconnected again. I had to wake up Claudia. She helped me. We got that back sorted. So I'll come with another recording later on the day, maybe tomorrow. We'll see what happens, how it goes. Okay, now it's Friday, the 9th of November, November 9th. We are in Mindelo, and the rest of the sail from Canary Islands to Cape Verde wasn't as smooth as it started. As soon as I finished that recording, I think we managed to have 3 nights with the autopilot. Then on the evening, before the 4th night, the autopilot just started disconnecting every 10 minutes or so. And then it didn't want to connect anymore. The sea started to be a bit rough, and I believe the autopilot was overworking and just it didn't connect. It disconnected all the time. And that started 4 days of helming the boat. Myself and Claudia will take turns, 2 hours one, 2 hours each one, or maybe an hour and a half, depending. And after 2 days and 2 nights of helming, the weather got a little bit better, the sea was a bit calmer. And at that point, I decided to that, you know, the sea is calm enough for me to try to connect the wind pilot, because I never used the wind pilot. And I said, okay, I'm going to try to use it and learn how to use it when the sea is calm and the wind is favorable. So I was waiting for perfect conditions in order to set up the wind vane. And I spent about an hour trying to set it up. It almost worked, but it didn't really work. I don't know, I'm doing something wrong. I managed to bend one metal rod at one end. So at that point, there was no hope to make it work anymore. It was very difficult to lift the rudder from the sea. Once you drop the rudder in the sea, the pressure on the rudder is very high. If you try to lift it, you cannot lift it unless the boat is moving at less than 2 knots. So after struggling 10-15 minutes to lift the rudder from the sea, the rudder for the wind vane, for the wind pilot, okay, I just attach a line to one end of the of this rudder, and then I put I got the line around the winch, and with the winch I was able to get that force, the force that I needed to lift the rudder out of the water. But before that, what I want to say, like, this week of sailing from Canary Islands to Cape Verde, the nights were really, really dark. There was no moon almost in the last 2 nights. And you're talking about a really pitch black night, stars on the sky, but they just, you know, they don't really throw any light around you. And because you navigate with the instruments, it's really tiring. You just keep your eye on to the instruments. You try to follow the course, because the swell throws you off the course every 2 seconds, every 3 seconds, and it doesn't throw you off the course like only 5 degrees. It can throw you off the course 10, 15 degrees easily. You are constantly trying to bring the boat back onto the course. So it's quite demanding. It's not so much physical as mental, because it's so difficult to keep your mind focused for 2 hours, let's say, or 3 hours on the compass. And if you let your mind drift away, like let's say you start thinking about something or dreaming, or, you know, you take your mind off the compass. 15 seconds later, you are 30 degrees off course or something like that. You might think that it's because the sails were not balanced. And, you know, I'm not going to argue that point. Maybe I didn't balance the sails really well. But at some point, we had only the mainsail up, for example, okay? And we are going downwind. I wouldn't say a run, but, you know, what's called a training run, like maybe 15 degrees, 20 degrees off the wind, running. And there is not much sail balance to be done in such a situation. You just have the mainsail out as much as possible, against the shrouds almost, you know, with a preventer. And there is very little to, you know, to adjust in terms of sail balance. I wouldn't have a head sail out because with the roll, and if the wind is not more than 50 knots, you get a lot of flapping from the head sail. I even tried to have the sail pulled out, and we had the sail pulled out for like half a day. But the flapping in the sail is just, you know, it's not nice. You hate that. You know that you are wearing off the sail, just shaking it constantly. So we decided to stay only with the main sail out if the winds are not strong enough. Anyway, 4 nights and 4 days of helming. There were times when I would do like a 3 or 4 hours shift. If I saw that Claudia was really exhausted, I would just push myself a little bit more. Like I had nights when, or days, let's say, where I maybe slept 4 hours altogether. And it's okay to have one night when you only sleep 4 hours. But when you add this night to the previous night to the previous night, it becomes like for the past 4 days, you got together half the sleep that you are supposed to get. And when you are awake, it's not like you're relaxing and lounging. You actually actively, you know, focusing and staying on course at the helm. It's pretty tiring. Anyway, for the past like half day or so, a little bit more, we decided to motor sail. The wind, as I said, was not too strong. It was just about 12 knots towards the end of the crossing, and even 9 knots. And we did a quick arithmetics, and it worked out that if you don't keep at least 5 knots of wind, we will not be able to arrive in Mindelo during daylight. So at that point, I said, okay, if the boat falls below 4.5, we turn on the engine and we try to stay at 5.5 under engine motor sailing. So we did that, and we managed to arrive in Mindelo. I think we are talking at around 4 o'clock, and around 7, I think it's already dark. And the reason you want to arrive in Mindelo during daytime is because the port itself, it's full of abandoned, not really full, but, you know, there are few abandoned vessels, even cargo kind of ships, so pretty big size ones, so they are not lit or anything. And then even daytime when I arrived, despite, you know, having photographs and chart and everything else, it was a bit confusing to find exactly our way to the berth, to the pontoon. And we didn't get any help from the marina staff either, despite us calling them repeatedly on channel 72. We tried channel 16, and the port authorities told us, no, the marina Mindelo is on channel 672. This is the port channel. So we tried to call them on 72, and nobody showed up to help us, unfortunately. But it was good. We managed to get the boat burst or moored, how you say, without any issues whatsoever. I'll talk a lot about Mindelo on the next audio journal. I just wanted to finish this one. So at the moment, we need to figure out to fix the autopilot. We need to figure out how the wind pilot works, because we will not be able to do the Atlantic crossing without these two pieces of equipment working. It will be really, really exhausting for me and Claudia to do 3 weeks of helming across the Atlantic. Will be absolutely crazy. We tried to get the children to helm a little bit, and they did take the helm for, you know, half an hour or something like that when the seas were calm, and we are motor sailing. But when we are sailing and we are only 15 degrees off the wind running, you don't want your child to hold the helm. An accidental jibe will be disastrous. Actually, we did have one accidental jibe, like proper jibe, and that was really scary. Despite having the preventer, somehow the line that was holding the boom wasn't tied properly, or it slipped, or the force of the wind, whatever, and the boom jibed. That was really, really scary. We were so lucky that nobody was standing. And after that happened, I made a habit of checking that the line is properly secured at all times. Like every 2 hours, I would really look again and make sure nothing has moved, nothing is broken or has too much tension. Anyway, it did feel like an achievement coming to Mindelo, and we ate in the local bar, the local restaurant here in the marina, the dinner. We had dinner there, and then we went to bed. We were absolutely exhausted. This is the second night I slept, and I slept like a baby. I still need a few more nights before I'll be fully recovered. Okay, so that's the finish, the end of this audio journal. And the next one will be about Cape Verde and Mindelo. It will be pretty exciting, in my opinion. Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.